Members, I will now call the Post-Secondary Education and Workforce Subcommittee to order. Andrea, will you please call the roll?
Chair Mello?
Here.
Vice Chair Beltran?
Here.
Ranking Member Tant?
Here.
Representative Amnesty? Representative Bell?
Here.
Representative Burfield?
Here.
Representative Cross?
Here.
Representative Dunkley?
Here.
Representative Escamani?
Here.
Representative Esposito?
Here.
Representative Gonzalez-Pittman?
Present.
Representative Henson?
Here.
Representative Lopez?
Here.
Representative Plasencia?
Here.
Representative Redmond?
Here.
Representative Schoaf is excused. Representative Temple is excused.
Thank you, members, and by your presence, we have a quorum. Members, I'll ask that you please silence all your cell phones. I realize it's lunchtime. You'll probably hear my stomach growling as well. So we are going to change the agenda a little. We have one bill that will be presented, and then we will have our presentation. If there are any members in the public that wish to speak or provide testimony to the subcommittee, please fill out an appearance card. It would be greatly appreciated. I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Let's move on, and we will now take up HB 501 relating to the renaming of Tallahassee Community College. Representative Tant, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Vice Chair Beltran, for scheduling this bill for hearing. Members, this bill renames Tallahassee Community College to Tallahassee State College. TCC originally opened its doors in Tallahassee in 1966 as a junior college. The name was later changed in 1970 to Tallahassee Community College, then reflecting its community orientation and deep involvement with the community it serves. Now in its 57th year, TCC is one of the top-ranked two-year institutions in the country, having earned prestigious recognitions from organizations like Aspen Institute and the American Association of Community Colleges. The institution enrolls nearly 16,000 credit and non-credit students yearly and offers over 70 credit degree and certificate programs and 48 non-credit programs. Recently, the college announced it would add 3 baccalaureate degrees in business administration, elementary ed, and exceptional education. These are in addition to the existing Bachelor of Science degrees in nursing that was added in 2014. With these new upper-level degrees and nearly 60% of the student body coming in from outside its service district, it's important to ensure that the brand represents the evolution into higher ed. So with that, the Board of Trustees at TCC launched the initiative to change the name. They held several listening sessions throughout the community, and they surveyed both students and faculty. And this is the name that was selected and is widely supported by the community. Members, that's the bill.
Thank you, Ranking Member Tant. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Okay, seeing no questions, we will now move into public testimony. We have a few appearance cards. I will start with Monty Stevens, Board of Trustees for TCC. Good morning. Mr. Stevens, you are recognized.
Good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair, for the recognition. I know it's lunchtime. I'll try to be brief, but I just thought it was important that the committee understand the very deliberative and thoughtful approach that the board led by Dr. Murdaugh took in the renaming process. As Representative Tant mentioned, there were multiple public hearings in all of the service areas that the college represents, including Gadsden County, which, by the way, just hosted a really cool active shooter training for schools. You can read about it. There's an article published about it, and I'm sure we'd be happy to chat with you about it. If your communities would like to participate, it's free to police forces and sheriff's departments around the state. To get to Wakulla County, where we have a world-class oyster harvesting program that has been featured on national programs and is really doing world-class science. So we believe that the name change better reflects the mission and the core mission of the college, which without question hosts students every day from all of your districts around the state. So thank you very much, Representative Tant, for presenting the bill, to Chairman Schoaf for carrying it, and to you, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill. Thank you, and I'm open for any questions.
Members, any questions? Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Next appearance card, we have President Jim Murdaugh, who is the president of Tallahassee Community College. Good afternoon, Mr. Murdaugh. You're very welcome. You're recognized.
It's not on?
It is on.
Oh. What did I do wrong? I thought it was on. Well, again, thank you very much for hearing the bill and for Representative Tant for carrying it and Chair Schoaf as well. This is an exciting moment for us. As you know, branding is incredibly important. We care deeply about our community. We care about who we serve. But we are looking to the future, and this represents our move into making sure we are very clear to who we serve, that we are all about the future and meeting the workforce needs of our area as well as the academic needs of the students who transfer to the universities from our college. So thank you so much.
Thank you, President Murdaugh. Anybody have any questions? Okay, thank you. Okay, committee members, we are moving into debate. Are there any members that wish to debate the bill? Okay, seeing none, Ranking Member Representative Tant, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One thing I left out when I was describing this is that the Board of Trustees has already approved this name change in terms of so that we can bring it to us. So this will be the last step in that process once we pass this bill. I would also like to just take a moment of quick personal privilege to tell everybody that one of the first things that I did as a young mom with a child with disabilities is try to figure out his future and future for people like him. And I went to TCC to see about the creation of something called the Eagle Connections Program, which is a program for people with cognitive disabilities that then became the subject of an OPAGA study that led to the creation of the Center for Students with Unique Abilities. None of that was planned. It was just done organically. And I want to say that TCC took a chance when it wasn't easy, when there wasn't funding on the table, and when nobody else was really in that space. And so this is the kind of thing that they do. I saw witness firsthand what a community engaged organization looks like. So this name change to me continues to embody what Tallahassee Community College does for this community. So with that, members, I ask for your positive vote.
Thank you, Representative Tant. Representative Tant, having closed, will Andrea please call the roll and announce the vote?
Representative Amnesty?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Burfield?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Esposito?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Hinson?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Plasencia?
Yes.
Redmond?
Yes.
Schoaf? Tant?
Yes.
Temple? Chair Mello?
Yes. Thank you. Members, by your vote, HB 501 has been reported favorably. Congratulations, Ranking Member Tant. Members, next, as many of you know about my passion for workforce and also my position sitting on CareerSource, being appointed as a board of director by the speaker, I think that it's important that we have some historical information and just basics 101 of CareerSource and their role in each one of our districts. And you will see that you have a personalized handout that has been provided to you by CareerSource, which I think is great, and it kind of breaks down your district and gives you information that's critical to your district. So that being said, we have the honor this morning to have Ms. Adrienne Johnston, who is the president and CEO of CareerSource Florida. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, thank you.
You're very welcome. You're recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair Mello, Vice Chair Beltran, and members of this committee. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning to share what we do at CareerSource Florida and specifically related to the activities that we do under the REACH Act. My name is Adrienne Johnston, and I am the President and CEO of CareerSource Florida. CareerSource Florida is the state's workforce policy and investment board. We are responsible for driving outcomes in the workforce system through policy development, funding direction, and future planning for Florida's job seekers and businesses. Core to our focus is providing opportunities to businesses that broaden Florida's talent pool by helping individuals with barriers to employment through services ranging from resume support and interview prep to completing the technical training needed to secure a meaningful job. And I just wanted to highlight that, particularly now during a tight labor market, it's really about opening up that labor pool and connecting individuals with barriers to opportunities that they may not have had before without our services, but also serving businesses who need that talent right now in their business. We do this work in collaboration with our partners, Florida Commerce and Florida's 24 local workforce development boards. Like the CareerSource Florida Board of Directors, local workforce development boards are also business-led, and they're responsible for offering the actual local resources that connect Floridians experiencing barriers to employment to career development opportunities, and they connect employers with qualified skilled talent. So the direct services provided by our network are provided by those local workforce development boards. It's important for you to understand as well that local boards are appointed by elected county officials. So they are their own independent board elected by county officials. That board then selects the executive director that runs the operations for that local area. I'll walk through the ways that CareerSource Florida influences the operations across the state. But first, I want to touch on the REACH Act. The Reimagining Education and Career Help Act, better known as the REACH Act, addresses the evolving needs of Florida's economy by increasing the level of collaboration and cooperation among state businesses and education. And a huge thank you to Chair Mello, who sponsored this act in 2021. It really provides a clear and bold blueprint that really positions Florida to be the number one in the nation for workforce education. This landmark REACH Act was the impetus for important modernization of Florida's workforce system that, upon implementation, will eliminate multiple barriers of administrative entities to improve coordination of the workforce development system, establish consistent eligibility standards across the state to improve the accountability of workforce-related programs, and it provides greater flexibility in allocating resources that will maximize the funds directed to training and business services. Overall, it calls for stronger alignment between businesses and education communities, along with increasing access to the workforce system across all populations. Specifically for CareerSource Florida, the REACH Act prescribed the realigning and consolidation of local workforce development boards, as well as minimizing duplication and maximizing resources to enhance outcomes for businesses and individuals that we serve. Thanks to the REACH Act, we are actively transforming a 30-year-old system 30 years old, that was decentralized and highly siloed, to one that is has increased efficiencies and better outcomes. Following the REACH Act, Senate Bill 240 in 2023, which is known as REACH Act 2.0, became law. This legislation positions Florida to help people with barriers to education and employment in order for them to become self-sufficient by enhancing access to good jobs and career pathways. So just building on the work done in the REACH Act. Additionally, Senate Bill 240 creates opportunities for work-based learning and apprenticeships. It promotes career and technical education and incentivizes companies to bring on apprentices, pre-apprentices, or student interns. And to that point, the CareerSource Florida Board of Directors next week will consider a revision to the existing apprenticeship strategic policy in response to this call to action. To further align the business and education communities, CareerSource Florida was charged with appointing education and industry consortia at each local workforce development area. These consortia are required to meet quarterly and include leadership staff from education, including both K through 12 and post-secondary. And it includes industry as well. The key there is that it expands beyond those representatives who currently sit on boards in the local area to engage even more industry leaders in that area and more education leaders in the area. Discussions at these quarterly meetings will allow industry to share their talent needs and education to share the related programs in place to support those needs. So truly working out how do we address those needs in real time. And reports from those quarterly meetings must be shared with that local workforce development board in the area, and we will be evaluating those at the state level as well. Together, the REACH Act and Senate Bill 240 further advance our network's efforts towards Florida's goal of becoming the number one state in workforce education by 2030. So this slide provides an overview of the priorities that were called for in the REACH Act that CareerSource Florida has implemented to date. And just a note on here, those items that are identified in blue are specific to the Credential Review Committee milestones that we've achieved. And I will walk through those in more detail in just a moment. I wanted to emphasize, just starting immediately in 2021, we addressed some technical changes that aligned our board structure and the annual report that we submit that are required in the new law. We also issued a policy that laid the foundation for future policy alignment across the local workforce boards, and I'll talk more about that in just a moment. We continued in 2022 with changes to our state plan. This is the plan issued to the U.S. Department of Labor. It's a four-year plan. We redo every 2 years. Again, I will talk a little bit more about that in more detail as well. We issued the first master credential list, which was based on the previously adopted CAPE list, and we issued the first baseline letter grades for each of the local workforce development board. And just by the way, with the letter grades, I think it's good to know that Florida is the first state in the nation to have issued this type of accountability metric for local workforce development boards. In February of this year, the CareerSource Florida Board adopted the first master credentials list developed through the Credential Review Committee's framework of quality. That same month, our board adopted the Florida Workforce System Transformation Plan. And next week, as I mentioned earlier, our board will be meeting again, and there they will establish statewide templates that will consistently be used across all local workforce development boards, specifically for contracts. So one of the primary tools that's used by the CareerSource Florida Board of Directors to enact the REACH Act is to issue policy to the local workforce development boards. In working with state workforce system partners and the REACH office, we've developed numerous policies shown on this slide, but I'd like to highlight a few of them just to call them out. So the first one listed here is the Comprehensive Education, Employment, and Training Strategic Policy. This policy provides a backdrop for all of the future actions, innovations, and transformations that are undertaken by CareerSource Florida. It was approved by our state board in December of 2021, to establish standards that ensure workforce-related programs are responsive to present and future needs, that they leverage funding from multiple sources to provide services to Florida's vulnerable populations, and identify barriers to coordination and align workforce-related programs to remove barriers for the individuals that we serve. These standards specific to the REACH Act, but they also incorporate feedback that CareerSource Florida received through a survey of local boards and stakeholders that was conducted in early 2021, in that survey it revealed that not all local boards were actively taking advantage of the flexibilities that are permitted under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which funds many of their services. So this is a direct response to that to ensure that boards know that the expectation is that they do leverage all of the funds available to them. Another policy that I'd like to highlight is the Florida Career Ladder Identifier and Financial Forecaster, or CLIF, strategic policy. This policy was officially rolled out across the entire network, and it includes the CLIF suite of tools and requires them to implement them in case management at the local workforce boards. We also shared this suite of tools with our local partners at the Department of Children and Families and did some training so that they also are able to use that with their customers. It maps the timing and impact of reductions that individuals will receive in public assistance as they progress along in-demand career pathways towards self-sufficiency. So really trying to provide the resources for folks to see where the pitfalls may be and how there are services in place through our network to help smooth those pitfalls out. I've talked a little bit about the Education Industry Consortium strategic policy that was implemented in September of 2023. Again, this was called for in Senate Bill 240, and this policy establishes the actual requirements of the consortia and the reporting requirements that go along with that. Full implementation is expected by January 1st of 2024, which is required by statute. And the last one I'll point to here is the State Standardization of Tools and Services strategic policy. This establishes a state strategy to standardize the use of tools, technologies, and services throughout the network to create a uniform experience in all local workforce development boards. It also calls for the state to leverage buying power that will result in the efficient use of funds. And I'll step back just for a moment here. This one, it, as it says, it's talking about standardization, but I think a good example to compare this to would be like a franchise model. So with the CareerSource Network, back about 10 years ago, we undertook some efforts, before I was part of the organization, undertook some efforts to rebrand. So the CareerSource Florida logo, that logo is used across the entire state, and so we use the same colors, the same naming conventions, those sorts of things. But really the rebranding effort stopped there. And as you know, with any franchise, it's important not just to have the same brand and the same name, but to have the same suite of services and available to customers so that you know what to expect when you walk in the door. My husband and I actually own a franchise here in Tallahassee, so this particular example is very meaningful to me. I fully understand the balance that you have to strike there between standardization. When I walk into another store that has the same name as mine, I want to know that I'm going to get the level of service that I expect, that the services that are provided are the same that I provide in my store. And so I want to know what that experience is, and I get really mad when I don't get that experience. But I also know as a business owner that I want to be responsive to my customers, right? I have different customers than maybe the store down the street, and I want to be able to provide the services that they need in order to maximize my profits and frankly, just be, you know, a good business person and to build relationships with the community. That's the same balance we're trying to strike here with our local workforce development boards. The federal law that and federal funding that provides for a lot of these services requires a certain amount of local autonomy and local rule. Again, those boards are appointed by county officials because that's what WIOA requires. But we know that we expect the same level of service across the state. So this is one of the first real tools that we have to really implement that that type of standardization and start working towards striking that balance. Okay, I want to shift gears a little bit here and just share a little bit about the CareerSource Network funding. So I mentioned the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. That's really what provides the bulk of the funding for the workforce system. Here we have it broken down by a few different programs within the WIOA program. And you can see overall, the key here is that over the past 3 years, this network has experienced a 6.4% reduction in total federal funding, and that includes all funds that are allocated to the local workforce development boards, both for administration but also for direct services. Notably, WIOA, that Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act funding, which is designed to serve Floridians with the most significant barriers to employment, that has decreased by almost 13%. So just wanted to provide that context for you as well. And I think it's important to understand, as I've mentioned, that this funding is intended to serve individuals with barriers to employment. We are in a current labor market cycle where folks who are coming into our career centers often have multiple barriers to employment. So in this tight labor market, it's important to know that those individuals who are walking in our doors often need multiple services, and many of those services take quite a while in order to complete because they often involve education and training. So we're talking about sometimes a year to 2 years that they are working, they're in our system receiving services. This slide provides you a breakdown of just a few of the populations that we serve. It's important to note that people may have multiple barriers, and so they could be counted more than once within that first total served column. But the highlight here at the top is there are about 15,000 individuals who were identified in the last program year who needed those intensive services and were able to participate in our programs. So during program year 2022, the CareSource Florida Network served nearly 94,000 individuals total. That includes Wagner-Peiser, which is a more, it's a less intensive service. So this includes resume help, job search, assistance, and interview preparation. It's of those individuals that we get down to that 15,000 number who are identified for the WIOA program participation. So again, that means that they experience multiple barriers to employment and agreed to follow an individual employment plan within our system. This table shows the outcomes for individuals who experience barriers such as disability, homelessness, former incarceration, being a single parent, or low income. And as noted on this chart, in many cases, an individual may experience multiple. As an example, we can see from the table that formerly incarcerated individuals who received case management and training services from our network had nearly 78% employment rate 6 months after exiting our program. They achieved a wage of $13.40 an hour, and nearly 59% of them received a credential. The focus of our system is long-term success, not just getting a job. We don't count a job as a success until after six months after they exit the program. We measure wages at that point as well, but credentials may be measured up to a year after they exit. So having an understanding of the funding of the system, another important tool that the CareSource Florida Board of Directors uses to direct local workforce boards is funding initiatives. The following initiatives were designed to advance the goals of the REACH Act and provide great examples of how we work with our partners partner agencies every day. The first mentioned on here is the Aviation, Aerospace, and Defense Manufacturing Sector Strategy. Through this initiative, about $9 million were allocated to three local workforce development boards, but that was part of a larger package of other grant funds, including the Job Growth Grant Fund, to braid those funds together and be really impactful to support the sector in the Space Coast, the aerospace and defense manufacturing industry in the Space Coast region. So that's just an example of leveraging funding across multiple agencies and partners and trying to be really impactful in that area. Hope Florida is an example. It enhances collaboration between CareSource Florida Network and the Department of Children and Families to help Floridians achieve self-sufficiency through employment, training, and support services. Really, this allows local workforce boards to better assist eligible Floridians with overcoming barriers to education, training, and employment. So the key there is that local partnership is really being strengthened through this particular initiative. Letter grades, which was called for specifically in the REACH Act, is another thing I wanted to highlight. So Florida's letter grades for local workforce boards include 7 core measures plus 1 extra credit metric to focus the workforce system on meaningful outcomes beyond the core federal measures. Those metrics are participants with increased earnings, reduction in public assistance, employment and training outcomes, work-related training, continued repeat business, so continuing to work with businesses who work with our system, year-over-year business penetration, so working with new businesses within the system, and then completion to funding ratio. And so beginning in 23-24 fiscal year, co-enrollment across WIOA partners is explicitly encouraged as local workforce development boards now receive credit for serving participants that are also served by education and vocational rehabilitation. So again, putting that emphasis on co-enrollment, leveraging our funds, making sure that the local boards understand the expectation that we should be using all available resources to serve the folks that we do serve. The last one mentioned on here is the WIOA Youth Waiver. So we applied for a grant to the U.S. Department of Labor in March of this year. This waiver expands the flexibility of WIOA youth funds and encourages local boards to support both in-school and out-of-school youth. The goal here, trying to get with in-school youth before they become out-of-school youth. So these are just some areas to provide proofs of concept at the local level that we can then turn and implement through policy like the ones that I just mentioned before. In 2024, CareerSource Florida will submit a WIOA combined plan to the U.S. Department of Labor. This will include collaboration with partners across the workforce ecosystem to define the system beyond just core required WIOA partners. And it's important to know that this level of collaboration and planning together is not required by the U.S. Department of Labor. So this is an extra step that we as the state of Florida are taking. And it's a bold step to include all of these programs under a shared set of goals. The partners that we are including in the combined plan include Florida Commerce's Community Services Block Grant, Reemployment Assistance, and Jobs for Veterans State Grant, the Department of Children and Families, SNAP Employment and Training, and TANF programs, and the Department of Elder Affairs Senior Community Service Employment Programs. Partners will collaborate to break down silos on workforce development efforts aimed at reducing welfare dependency and increasing economic self-sufficiency. So I'm not going to go through the whole slide, but I did want to highlight one of the goals just to give you a flavor of the idea behind this. So the top goal that you see there is increasing the state labor force participation rate. Currently, it stands at 59.8% as of October 2023. The goal is to increase it to 63%. That is a very ambitious goal, but I think it's an important one that if we can all align all of our programs to, again, in this tight labor market, to increase our labor force participation rate, that will have many downstream effects that will influence all of the communities in our state. So this is just one example of how we are really working together to make sure we're maximizing all of our resources across these partners. So again, those are the areas that the CareerSource Florida Board of Directors really have. Those are the tools that we have to influence the local workforce boards. It's funding, the funding initiatives to set the stage for what we think we should be implementing through policy. It's actual policy direction, and then it's through this four-year plan that we submit to the U.S. Department of Labor that we are then accountable to as partners. But I wanted to shift attention. I know there was some interest in the Credential Review Committee, so I wanted to lay out the Credential Review Committee activities that we've conducted over the past few years. Established by the REACH Act, the Credential Review Committee is charged with developing a definition for credentials of value and using that definition to create a master credentials list. The committee meets quarterly, and membership includes public and private education, local workforce development boards, business, and industry. School districts, colleges, and local boards can submit applications to CareerSource Florida through an online portal. The law is very clear. The master's credential list is not meant to address every skill needed to attain a job. The credentials presented here are listed in the REACH Act as eligible for evaluation through the framework. And please note, so while these are all eligible to be evaluated, there were not data available through the Labor Market Estimating Conference for bachelor's degrees until this year, so we are now working to incorporate that into our evaluation process. So the Credentials Review Committee met through 2022 to develop a framework of quality, establishing four work groups to define each of the criteria required by the REACH Act. So the first work group mentioned here is credential identification. So before we could even talk about evaluating credentials, we had to do an inventory of all the credentials available in the state. So that work group was responsible for that. The demand threshold work group was charged with developing the definition and criteria for local demand, using labor market data established by the Labor Market Estimating Conference, which was also created by the REACH Act. The wage threshold work group was charged with defining the criteria for wage thresholds that would be used to evaluate non-degree credentials. And then credential seeking was charged with defining acceptable documentation to show a credential has value through stacking. Each work group was headed by a credential review committee member and dedicated staff person from the CareerSource Florida or Department of Education. We had tremendous participation from school district personnel, industry representation, and a variety of stakeholders. It was truly a year of rolling up the sleeves and doing a lot of work. I was the head of one of the committees, so I was very involved in developing the framework. So what is the framework of quality process? This slide provides an overview of how credentials are evaluated through the framework of quality. I will go through each in detail, so I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this particular slide here, but I hope it provides a nice visual to help you, you know, kind of see how we walk through these different steps. The one thing I will note here is there is a distinction between a degreed credential and a non-degree credential. Degree credentials are only required to meet the demand criteria in order to be on the master credentials list. The non-degree credentials must also meet the wage criteria. So it must meet demand and wage. If it does not meet those criteria, then it is evaluated for sequencing. Again, I'll walk through that in just a moment. Okay, before we can even talk about evaluating the credential through the framework of quality, that credential first has to be linked to an occupation. So I'm going to kind of walk through what that looks like. It's important to know that when we link it to an occupation, it's linked to a standard occupation classification code, which is defined by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. A credential can only be linked to an occupation if the skills certified by that credential are both necessary and sufficient to meet the requirements of that occupation. I'll kind of walk through what that means. Industry certification is a credential resulting from a voluntary process through which individuals are assessed by an independent third-party certifying entity using predetermined standards for knowledge, skills, and abilities. So those are also evaluated, and that's a definition that comes from statute and the CAPE list process that we have adopted into the framework of quality. So what does it actually look like to link an occupation? So this slide demonstrates how skills attained or certified through the credential, which here is shown on the left, are linked to skills required to perform the occupation, which is shown on the right. So we have a data science specialist, which was the latest credential that was added to the list back in September. And as you can see here, the data science specialist requires analysis using statistical software tools. So that's the third kind of bullet down on that right-hand side. There are several different tools out there that could train or prepare you for doing that analysis. I've used some of them myself. There are tools like R, SPSS, and SAS. Those are kind of your big popular tools for doing statistical software analysis. You can get certifications on those different tools. So I could go do a class and get a certificate that says that I'm SAS certified, and so I've performed certain things that show that I'm ready to go in and do actual statistical analysis using that software program. But you can see that there are other activities and requirements within that job beyond just using those tools. And so what we are saying is, in order to link this credential with that occupation, it has to prepare you for the bundle of skills that are required for that occupation. So pretty much everything on that right-hand side, not just one of those things, even though it's very important to that occupation. I would also like to point out, so when we do this analysis, the applicant does propose the link that they think makes the most sense. We don't stop there. We do look to see, I do want to give recognition to the Department of Commerce, WISER team, the Workforce Statistics Program over there. They are the experts in making these linkages, and so they look across all occupations to see if they can make a reasonable linkage, not just based on what was submitted in the application. All right, so once we have the linkage there, again, we go through the framework of quality process. We look to see if they meet the demand criteria. Both state and local demand criteria are based on available employment levels and job openings for a given occupation, and it serves as an indicator for business need. Additionally, local workforce development boards can establish local demand based on alignment with their targeted industries or based on online job postings for that area. The wage criteria. According to statute, the wage criteria ensures that individuals are receiving a credential on the master credential list and that are preparing them for an in-demand occupation that has the opportunity for middle to high wages. So the wage thresholds are all about ensuring that those jobs that they're being prepared for will lead to a mid to high wage job. Finally, we have, for those non-degree credentials being considered that do not meet demand or wage criteria, we move to credential sequencing. In order to meet this criteria, both listed here must be met in order to get on the list for sequencing. And I'll give you an example that I think will make it a little bit easier to understand. So if you think about a certification, CompTIA Security Plus is a pretty common one in the IT world. One of the prerequisites for that certification is to have the CompTIA Network Plus certification. So that's actual prerequisite in order to get the security certification. If it were the case that the Security Plus is eligible for the master's credential list, it meets demand and wage criteria. But the Network Plus does not, because it is a prerequisite and it can naturally, it's required for that credential that is on the list, it would be then on the list due to sequencing. So it's really key that it's tied directly to a certification or a credential that is eligible to be on the list, and then that makes it eligible, as long as they meet those demand and wage criteria. Overall, the goal here is to ensure that if an individual receives this credential, that they are on, again, a path to a high wage, mid to high wage occupation that's in demand. So if a credential does not make it on the master credential list, there is a process to move forward. And it's important to know that that applicant will be issued a notice of denial that shares the specific deficiencies that their application had. And that is presented to them within one business day of the Credential Review Committee decision. I would like you to know, however, that that's not the first time that they will have heard from our team. Our team does do quite a bit of technical assistance, so if they're asking questions throughout the process, if they present something that's incomplete or that we have questions about or we're not quite sure we'll make it, we will work with them to ensure that we have as much information, that all of it's accurate, and that we understand it before we get to this point of a letter of denial. Even beyond that, applicants have 15 days from the notice of denial to appeal directly to the president and CEO of CareerSource Florida. All appeals that are received are then reviewed by an interagency team made up of members from CareerSource Florida, the Department of Education, and Florida Commerce. Appeals are then brought to the CareerSource Florida Board of Directors for final decision. Just for awareness, to date we have had two appeals for a total of 8 credentials. So each of those represented multiple credentials. And so far, 2 credentials have been denied through the appeal process. 1 has been accepted, and then 5 are slated to go before the board next week at their board meeting. So this slide provides an overview of the quarterly application cycle, just to emphasize that this is an ongoing process and that applicants they can apply anytime during the year. And we review those applications quarterly. So you can see here on the slide, the deadlines are marked in green at the bottom. So we have a September, December, March, and June deadline. Again, we can receive those applications at any point throughout the cycle. The applications received by each quarterly deadline are evaluated using the framework of quality and brought before the Credential Review Committee at the next meeting. We have those quarterly deadlines so that we allow for about 8 weeks of time to do the evaluation. Also want to make note that any credential being considered for CAPE funding for August of a given year must be submitted in the September prior, in the year prior, in order to have full time to evaluate and present to the State Board of Education in February, so that there's time for both the education system to react and prepare for those funding opportunities, and that so that everybody knows what's going to be available. So trying to maximize the exposure so that everybody is aware of what will be available for CAPE funding. Since February of 2023, a total of 140 applications have been received, with a total of 52 credentials added. And just as a reminder, these are the funding sources that are directed by the Master Credentials List. Career and Professional Education Act Secondary and Post-Secondary Funding, or CAPE funding, as I just mentioned, the WIOA Individual Training Accounts, State-Level Incumbent Worker Training, and Open Door Grant Funding. We continue to look for ways to improve both the framework of quality and the evaluation process. Some upcoming enhancements include some heat maps that will show demand by geographic area. I've included just an example of what that will look like in your packet. It's the next slide from this one. We are adapting for emerging demand, so having a lot of conversations with industry representatives to see how we can capture things that maybe don't show up in the data, but we know they're going to be needed in the future, so we want to have a way to incorporate that into the framework so that we can be responsive and anticipate future needs. And per statute, the framework of quality is required to be reviewed every 2 years, so we will begin that review process next year. In all, we continue to leverage the progress being made through the Workforce System Transformation Plan, a new set of funding initiatives for the next program year, and of course, the shared vision and the goals we are outlining in the 2024 WIOA combined state plan. With that, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, that concludes my presentation, and I thank you again for allowing me the opportunity to share this with you today.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. And, you know, with the REACH Act and SB 240, sitting on this committee, vice chairing last year, chairing this year, there is a lot to absorb and understand. Thank you for your time this morning. Prior to committee, there's still more things that I'm learning. I love the slide that really lets us all know that this is a federally funded program, and that as much as we love accountability, and we're all working on that. So I want all of you to know that prior to asking questions, we will continue to work on local workforce boards and what does that look like and how can we have an accountability measure there as well. Yes. As I go around the state, and I'm sure many of you in the education space, you get a lot of these questions, and that's why I thought it was so important that you understand the master credential list. Ms. Johnson, how many credentials are on the master credential list?
Oh, goodness. A lot.
A lot.
Yes.
So just know that there is a lot of opportunity out there. We did have a conversation this morning that you can lead a horse to water, but you not necessarily can force them to drink. So there are a lot of opportunities. I'm going to give everybody the opportunity to ask questions. I would love for you just to kind of talk about the budget, knowing that it's just under $2 million that we pay in marketing. And you talked about rebranding, and as a business owner, yes, it is critical. And I would love for you just to kind of talk about your marketing budget. Mm-hmm. And are there ways that we could improve marketing with our local workforce development boards, and how do we push them to go out into the business community and build those relationships? You're recognized.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. That's a wonderful question. I'll lay out what we currently do for marketing and then some opportunities that I think that we have. So last year we allocated, as you mentioned, we have a nearly $2 million outreach contract that we share both with our partners at Department of Education and also the local workforce development boards. About $550,000 of that was allocated for direct advertising, so your traditional advertising to targeted populations. Last year, about $250,000 of that was for job seekers, so trying to educate individuals on the services that are provided for them at the local level, and $300,000 was allocated for businesses, so targeted business outreach. At the end of last year, we did a survey of businesses to better understand how we could, you know, do outreach, more meaningful outreach to them. And so we are taking that feedback and incorporating it into our outreach efforts. This year, our targeted advertising budget is $650,000. Now, we have kind of flipped that a little bit where we're focusing more on job seekers. We just find that it costs a little bit more to reach the folks that we need to reach. And so we are revamping that effort and also redoing some of our assets for that group. So we did flip it a little bit, but there's still targeted business outreach across the network. Again, we are working to incorporate the feedback we've received into that outreach from a business perspective. We also do a lot of partnerships. So part of that contract is also to engage with industry representation across the state. So we have a partnership with the Florida Chamber and others in order to reach their networks and make sure that they understand how to engage at their local level. So I do a lot of work with the Florida Chamber, but I also go down to other local chamber events and make sure we have, even from a CareerSource Florida perspective, we have a presence in the community to help drive them to their local areas, but also to hear from their perspective if there are things we can do at the state to help smooth those relationships. And that's where I'll get into kind of the opportunities that we have. So part of the Workforce System Transformation Plan is a regional planning effort that is really geared towards a more collaborative and aligned effort between workforce development and economic development at a regional level. So really thinking more broadly, we're not just focused on what's going on in this county or this particular area, but what are our assets and our resources within a broader area, and how do we leverage those together? That means that we all have to be singing from the same sheet of music, and we have to be engaging with business. So there are several things that kind of build upon each other in order to make sure that we're more focused in our engagement, and that it's a consistent engagement across the state.
Thank you very much for that explanation. Okay, members, I will now start taking questions. For those of you that have questions, and Ranking Member Tant, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of them, if you don't mind.
Yes, ma'am.
In respect to, great to see you again. I know we've talked on the phone multiple times, and thanks for putting up with my very strong comments about some stuff. So at any rate, in respect to the local chambers, one of the things that strikes me is that it might be helpful, or do you already do this, provide some sort of coaching, technical support, whatever, to help some of our smaller chambers know how to connect businesses with their employers for the purpose of working with the career source boards. I can just tell you that from two of my local chambers in small communities, I think they could use some mentoring. And so I'm just wondering if you provide that to them.
You're recognized.
Thank you. I think that's a wonderful point, a great suggestion. I think we do maybe more on an ad hoc basis, but I love the idea of kind of really standardizing that and thinking mm-hmm. that through and being more intentional.
Madam Chair, I think that would be really helpful, because when I try to explain to them what I've seen work in Tallahassee, it's just not as cohesive there. So I think that would be a great support for them. In respect to the development of the framework of quality that you referenced, the four work groups and their membership, to what extent did these groups get any feedback from the public?
Let's see. It's a group.
Oh, sorry. You're recognized.
Thank you. Great question. So we had many representatives from different industry groups. They were considered work groups where we invited folks who were experts in those areas. Each one was a little bit different in terms of the makeup, but it was largely staff within Department of Education or the local post-secondary institutions who came together along with industry personnel to inform them.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes, ma'am, you're recognized.
So the next question I have is in respect to those groups, to what extent were rural areas included in this?
You're recognized.
We had representatives from local workforce boards as part of this as well, and I know there were several rural representatives on the groups, particularly on the wage and the demand groups. I can speak with certainty on exactly who was there from the rural perspective. They actually gave quite a bit of good input. We also engaged, as I mentioned, the industry representatives, and they provided rural representatives as well.
And also Representative Tant and SB 240, especially it will have a very positive impact on rural. I have a very rural district as well, because it's a rural representative is required to sit on that consortium.
That's great.
Yes.
Yes.
You're recognized.
Next question. On the slide you had referencing the upcoming enhancements to the master credentials list, can you get into how the committee plans to adapt to make the list meet emerging needs? Because there's always there's a constant evolution in the needs of our state.
You're recognized.
Absolutely. This has been a big topic, particularly. So we've started with certain industries in our state. I would point to the space industry and the discussions around broadband implementation. Because those are kind of our more immediate, I'd say, investments that we've been discussing. What we are looking at is how do we engage industry and education that in those industries who can tell us what they're seeing on the ground. So particularly from a business perspective, having them in the room and having a mechanism for them to evaluate the master credential list. So we just did this with folks in the Space Coast. where they we actually show them the master credential list and say, you know, this is what's available right now. Where are the gaps? And so they can highlight for us if there's anything that they see is missing right now, and then just continuing that conversation. So what we're working on, we kind of have a framework to pull from. Now how do we build that into our process and make sure that it's sustainable?
Couple more, and I won't wear out my welcome here.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'm going to jump to the slide you had on the funding currently directed by the Master Credentials list, which goes to the Career and Professional Ed CAPE Act, and then the secondary and post-secondary funding. I'm not going to focus on the funding question. I have a technical question for you, and that is that in Jefferson County, for example, for a CTE child, so a student who is a secondary student who is in career tech ed, and they want to do dual enrollment, the Tallahassee State College service area does not include them. So they're now in part of, they've been absorbed into the Capital City region or Capital Region Career Source, which is, you know, we've talked about that many times. The issue is, how do we serve those students? And I can't believe we're the only ones. And they're also, their technical students can't go to Lively, they go to Big Bend Tech. And is there a way to have a memorandum of understanding or some sort of technical support where it's clear that students can go to where, if the institution in their service area does not provide it, they can go to one of these other areas? The reason I ask that question is right now it's on a case-by-case basis with special permission that has to be sought and then granted. So I'm just wondering if we could ease that so that students have that flexibility and there's no holdup to them getting that education.
You're recognized.
Thank you. That is a great question, and you're right. That's something that we've heard from other areas. They have similar concerns where they're consolidating. The goal here really is to promote more opportunities for access for individuals. And so, yes, the idea is that that local board would ensure that those institutions are on their eligible training provider list, and therefore individuals being served by the local workforce system would have access to funding through the system at those institutions.
Question? This will be my last one for now. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, for indulging me. In respects to the target population, as you know, I've got a particular interest in the disability target population as well as all the other vulnerable populations that can't get jobs. On this slide that provides target population outcome data, to what extent has CareerSource Florida developed a comprehensive policy that leverages multiple sources of funding to support these programs? And as a subset of that question, do you utilize the ready-to-work curriculum for training of those individuals? And then as a subset of that question, I have asked about the transition programs in the state of Florida at all of our high schools that do 18 to 22-year-olds training or kids with disabilities. They're telling me that the ready-to-work curriculum does in fact need modification for their students to be able to master it. And I was wondering if we could, so I wanted to park that on the parking lot with you, and that is something I'm going to want to keep discussing. So that's it, Madam Chair. I can go break those down if you need me to.
I think there was three additional questions in there.
Yes.
So, Ms. Johnson, you are recognized. Good luck.
Thank you. I will do my best. In terms of the policy that is focused on maximizing funds for multiple funding sources,
right.
I think that's what you were asking. The Comprehensive Education, Employment, and Training Strategic Policy that I mentioned earlier, that really is our policy to say you need to use every resource available as a local board to serve the vulnerable populations that come into our door. So it really lays out that is the expectation, that you're going to leverage multiple resources and that you're going to be responsive to future, present and future business needs.
Madam Chair, are those resources identified for those boards? Do they know where to go to pull those resources in?
They are. So,
recognize
you. They are. So here we're focusing on our partners. So yes, they are. But it's really focused on who are our partners and what resources do they have. So it's making sure that you're educated on what they have available. But then also within the local workforce board, there's even opportunity to better leverage the funding that comes directly to the local board. So, for example, I've talked about WIOA on the slide that shows the budget breakdown. There's WIOA, but there's also SNAP and TANF funds for employment and training. How do we braid those together and make sure we're leveraging them within the service to one individual?
Thank you.
I'm done. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome, Representative Tant. Representative Henson, I know it's been a long wait. Sorry to startle you. You are recognized.
You did startle me. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the presentation. And I always wanting to comprehend what it is that you're doing. First of all, on the consolidation of all of the different counties, I have asked one of your representatives about transportation so that people in rural areas, again, can access some of these programs that are now going to be available to them through that consolidation. Is that what you're calling a dislocated worker, or could you explain to me what a dislocated, I hear up here. Can you explain to me what a dislocated worker is, as well as how you are accommodating that barrier to access?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I think that's a great question. Thank you for asking. So a dislocated worker in the context that we're talking about is an individual who has lost their job due to no fault of their own. Mm. So it isn't really related directly to transportation. However, on the transportation side of things, again, this is where we go back to the idea of leveraging our funding within the network and making sure that we are using the funds available to us to meet individuals' needs, and often that is transportation. So there are a couple of things that local boards do to meet barriers. One, particularly in rural areas, but there's some urban areas that do this mm-hmm. as well. They have mobile units. So they don't ask people to come to them. They actually go out into the community with their mobile unit in order to be there and present to minimize some of those transportation barriers. They also do have funds that can be used to help individuals with transportation. So it is up to that local board to work with their partners in the transportation space and identify the best way to allocate those funds.
And Representative Henson, I would like to add, we do also provide a lot of online opportunities for people as well, which helps alleviate transportation issues. You have a follow-up?
I do. I have several questions, if you don't mind. So here you say you work with single-parent pregnant women. What?
I'm not sure that's a question that
What kind of outreach or services can be offered to a single parent pregnant, well, a single parent, but a pregnant woman in this particular instance?
And just so many of you know, I have been talking about the missing middle. And the missing middle is how can we empower someone who is a single parent or someone who may be pregnant that we would like to empower them mm-hmm. For better opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of what you see here in this presentation has been at my request. So I believe the question, and let me know if I am incorrect, is what do we offer mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. a single parent or someone who is expecting?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. For anybody who walks into our system, we have the services that are listed. There's, you know, the job search assistance, there's resume training, there's technical and foundational skills training. All of those are available. For this particular group, I think the consideration there is childcare. Right. So again, like transportation, we often hear that childcare is one of the biggest barriers to employment or to training in order to get a meaningful job. So the local workforce development boards do have resources to assist with childcare. For pregnant women, the idea is to help make sure that they understand that those resources are available to them so that they don't drop out of the labor force. Or that they know that they can engage in the labor force through, you know, training or anything that they need, so that we're preventing them from leaving because they think that childcare is going to be a barrier for them.
Mm. And Representative Henson, this is why the partnerships with mm-hmm. DCF and the REJACT and HOPE Florida are so critical, because this is, in my opinion, the missing middle that isn't the traditional student that we need to think about. Absolutely. And how can we empower them and upskill them.
Absolutely.
And provide them better opportunities.
Thank you for that. One final question, ma'am.
You're recognized.
One final chair. Thank you so much. Thank you, I mean, for all you do and for bearing with me on wanting to understand all of this and what it is you do. In your chart, entered employment rate Q2 post-exit, sounds like you're tracking the people that you serve. So how long after an exit are you collecting the data? Is it 3 months or a year or what?
You're recognized.
Thank you. We actually, and these are per federal requirements. Oh. So these are some of our federal measures. So we are looking at essentially 6 months after they exit the program. So that would be their employment during the second quarter after they exit. We also look at fourth quarter after they exit. So I didn't put everything up here. There are some other measures that we have to see if they're still employed even a year after they exit our program.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're very welcome. Thank you. You have questions? Just one? Okay. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Staying on the same slide, the rate Q2 median wage, is that a monthly amount? Is that for a quarter? What does that reflect? And thank you for this comprehensive presentation.
You're recognized.
Thank you for that question. It represents a quarterly wage.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. Seeing none. Yes. Thank you very much for this comprehensive presentation. It's been very informative and I think addresses a lot of questions a lot of members had.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Okay, members. I hear everybody's stomachs growling. And thank you all for the questions. Hopefully this information was helpful for you all. And that concludes today's agenda. Seeing no further business before the subcommittee, Representative Esposito moves, we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.